Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and getting back to the nudes, yesterday we learned more about the shell company that Donald Trump's occasional attorney slash fixer, Michael Cohen, used to make the infamous Stormy Daniels payout. More than $4.4 million flowed into Cohen's company, Essential Consulting, from a New York investment firm tied to a Russian oligarch, as well as from Fortune 500 companies like AT&T and Novartis. So if your head is spinning and you're having trouble keeping track of all the players and potential connections flowing in and out of Trump world, that might be because you're not used to Russian-style graft and its influence on the way Donald Trump and his orbit may have conducted business. Nothing's been proven. But Seth Hatena is a former investigative reporter with the AP and has a new book called Trump/Russia, A Definitive Guide, and he walks readers through Donald Trump's business history and all its entanglements with Russia. So, Seth, thanks for the book, and thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So to jump right in on the news, what do you know about Viktor Vekselberg, the Russian oligarch closely tied to the New York investment firm Columbus Nova that paid Cohen's company $500,000?
Yeah, so there's a lot to unpack there. Let me just preface this by saying what my book does is kind of walk readers back. As you mentioned, this is a super confusing story, and it changes almost by the hour, it seems.
Really? Yeah.
So what I did, I kind of gave this, I think it's the first time anybody's done this, is to take people back and look at the past. And what's interesting about that is that despite Trump's confusing rhetoric and what he kind of gives us all the time, their behavior doesn't really change. So here you have a relationship, with a firm that's connected to this Russian oligarch. Now, if you're a lobbyist in D.C., people don't just call you and ask you to lobby. They're pre-existing relationships here. And Vekselberg is really interesting. What he is kind of the key Kremlin money man in the United States. And he was kind of viewed an interesting way. He was viewed as a good oligarch who wasn't like one of the, quote, bad oligarchs connected to the Russian mafia. But that may have been somewhat naive. And, he was seen by this, there's a guy who worked under an Obama's National Security Council who called him a tool for co-opting U.S. elites. He got involved in disputes in Harvard and things involving Jewish religious texts. So he had a kind of, he has quite substantial connections to the U.S. Another interesting connection here, and I don't think this has really gotten fleshed out, but he served on the Bank of Cyprus, and the person he served with on that board was Wilbur Ross, who is Trump's commerce secretary. So, there's a complex picture here, but this guy is deeply tied to money interests in the Kremlin.
But people are allowed to do business, even with people tied to money interests in the Kremlin.
Yeah.
So do you, with your knowledge of Trump and Russia, take anything from what's known so far about the Vekselberg story that might indicate any dirty dealings that go back to the president? Because otherwise nobody really cares.
Yeah. At this point, we don't have enough information to say this is that there's any criminal intent here. I think Robert Mueller is following the money here.
He's 100 steps ahead of everybody.
Exactly. That's exactly right.
But the question, I guess, even to speculate on is whether there's anything in that Vekselberg-Cohen relationship that indicates a quid pro quo for information about Hillary Clinton or anything else during the campaign.
Right. That's the implication. That it raises more questions than it answers. I have to say, and there are other companies involved in this too, AT&T, Novartis, these other companies were also hiring Michael Cohen as a lobbyist. But in fairness to AT&T and Novartis, I don't think they knew Michael Cohen the way we know Michael Cohen now. Now, so much has come out. We know a lot about his past and his dirty dealings. And so there's a lot still to unpack here, and that's things that we just don't know.
Let me ask you about another Russian who's been in the news, and that's the lawyer Natalia Veselnitskaya, the one who, along with a few other people, met with Don Jr. and Paul Manafort and Jared Kushner at that infamous Trump Tower meeting in June 2016. Maybe with your research into her and others, you have more of a sense than a lot of people do about what they were really offering and what they were really after.
Yeah. So you know, Vetslanitskaya, so that's a, to me, I think people are missing kind of the what really happened to that meeting. You know, to an intelligence officer, that meeting bears really familiar fingerprints. That what you have is and she's come out and now said that she's an informant for the government, and that, so she's a cutout. She's a third party kind of coming into this meeting that's being pitched to Don Jr., Trump's son, as a Russian government attorney bearing dirt on Hillary Clinton. And so, number one, they don't reject that meeting, you know, which instead of calling the FBI, Don Jr.'s great, set it up, and he brings Manafort and his brother-in-law, Jared Kushner, along. But I think that the even more interesting point is that what the reaction. So, you know, Don Jr. calls that meeting a waste of time. Those are his words. So the message that comes back to Russia is, look, the dirt, you know, that Don Jr. is saying, look, the dirt you have, it's just not good enough. Do you have anything more? What else do you have? And a few days after that, you know, then Julian Assange announces, I have Hillary Clinton's emails. And, you know, there's too many coincidences in this story for this to just be another coincidence.
And that's, I guess, what we'll still have to wait for Robert Mueller to be the one who answers as to how many dots actually connect with other dots and how many there's just a series of isolated events that don't actually add up to conspiracy with a foreign country to influence the election.
Right. There's a great quote from Ian Fleming, you know, the writer of James Bond, who was a former intelligence officer. And it's once as happenstance, twice as coincidence, and three times as enemy action. And, you know, I think we're well past three. We're in the dozens by this point.
Can you talk about Felix Sater and his long-time relationship with Michael Cohen or anybody else? This is another very interesting actor in this whole thing who raises very interesting questions by what's known about him, but not a household name.
Right. And so just for people who don't understand, Felix Sater he's a man who's managed to live several lives in the space of one. He was born here. He was born in Russia. He was raised in Brighton Beach, Brooklyn, not far from here. And he was the son of a Russian gangster. And he grew up, he became a stockbroker, got into some trouble, and then kind of went into a mob-linked brokerage fraud for a while and was about to go to prison again. He had already been in prison a first time. And at that point, he became a government witness. And he began like a 10-year or even more, dozens of years of like deep undercover work for the U.S. government. And it's during that undercover work that he hooks up with Donald Trump and pitches what becomes Trump Soho, this tower down here, which is built with some shady interests from Kazakhstan and some Russian money. And it's a really curious, murky picture. But, you know, I started out this book thinking that Felix Sater was kind of a bad guy. And by the end of it, I just think I have a mixed picture about him. It's this Trump Russia story is a weird thing where the you know, the president may be, you know, maybe engaging in all kinds of bizarre acts, and his attorney is a suspected criminal, but the actual criminal, Felix Sater, may be something of a hero, that he's a guy who literally risked his life for the U.S. to go undercover many, many times. And, you know, he deserves, you know what, you can say a lot of bad things about him, but you know, he deserves some credit for that.
One more name. Alex van der Zwaan, he became yesterday, with all this other news about North Korean hostages and Gina Haspel and Michael Cohen, it's barely breaking through. But the first person to go to jail because of a Mueller conviction, that happened yesterday. Alex van der Zwaan, or Monday, sorry,
right.
Former Skadden Arps attorney. Who's he? How does he fit in?
Well, you know, he is an attorney who was working with Skadden Arps, and Skadden Arps had a relationship with Paul Manafort. They were doing work for Ukraine while Paul Manafort was over there, and they were paid millions to write a report that showed that Manafort's client, who's the then president of Ukraine, who's since fled basically to Russia, that he had arrested his opponent, and Skadnarp's job was to produce a report that's totally normal and kosher, which they did for millions of dollars. So there was a relationship between Skadnarp's and Paul Manafort and his associates. And Alex van der Zwaan had some knowledge of this, and when he was questioned, you know, like so many other people in the story, rather than just say what he knows, he lies. And you know, we've seen that over and over, that Major Michael Flynn, you know, this has happened when confronted, the people seem to reflexively just dodge the facts.
The biggest indication that they have something really bad to hide about Russia is that so many people are getting charged or convicted of perjury for lying about their contacts with Russians.
Yeah, and they're getting, and they keep doing it. You know, Michael Flynn gets charged, and then somebody else keeps happening. And yeah, that's just, you know, another kind of indication that there's something that is being deeply, deeply hidden here.
How about from the other side? What does Putin really think he's going to get by Trump being president as opposed to Hillary Clinton? And is he getting it?
Well, yeah. So I think this has evolved over time. I think he started out, he despised Hillary Clinton. So anybody who was not Hillary Clinton was better in his eyes. And he saw Clinton as someone who had destabilized his regime, who had incited protests, who had embarrassed him, and he just despised her. So whoever wasn't Clinton, I think Trump was not Clinton. But I think over time he realized that Trump was more, that Trump was chaos. You know, he's the chaos candidate. And, you know, we see that every day.
And they're trying to sow chaos in the West anyway to strengthen Russia by weakening us. Do you think Putin has anything on Trump?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. Look, you know, this whole Stormy Daniels story, which, you know, we haven't touched on, but, you know, what Stormy, I think everybody understands, what Stormy Daniels shows is that Trump is blackmailable, that he can be put in a compromising position quite easily. And look what Michael Avenatti does to him every day, you know. So someone with that kind of behavior going to Russia repeatedly, I would be surprised if there's not something on him. But, you know, it may not be what we think it is. It may be financial. It may be something else.
If you can slip in a 15-second projection of what we can expect from Russia in terms of meddling in this year's midterm elections, do you see anything?
I think it's already started. I mean, that's the really scary part for me, is that our democracy has been attacked and we have not responded.
Seth Fatena is a former investigative reporter with the Associated Press, and has a new book with this deep dive that goes back in history as well as on the current stuff to the extent that it can with publication dates. It's called Trump Russia, A Definitive Guide. Really interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.